I'm James Mawson, founder and editor-in-chief of our three venture-focused titles, Global Corporate Venturing, Global University Venturing, and Global Government Venturing. And welcome to our weekly review. Thierry Hellas, editor of Global University Venturing, Gov, and GGV, Global Government Venturing, and regular podcaster, is on hold, but we'll be back next week. And what a week he's missed! Arvind Sadani may have stepped down as president of Intel Capital at the end of last year, but it hasn't taken him long to get back in the game. He's formed a new VC firm called Silver Trail Ventures, and head of speaking at our Global Corporate Venturing and law firm DLA Piper Corporate Venture Capital Strategy Seminar in Tokyo a few weeks ago. He warned that for corporate venturers, innovation and disruption is more important than business development. Sadani has been on the trail trying to raise $500 million. And he was ranked first in our last Global Corporate Venturing Power List in 2014. So happens we've been preparing our next list of the top 100 executives, lead and CVCs, out of the 1,400 tracked by Global Corporate Venturing Analytics. To help the quants angle from Toby Lewis and his team at GCV Analytics, we've been building up the qualitative side on these leaders nominated for the invite-only awards dinner timed around our Global Corporate Venturing Symposium on 24th, 25th May in London, where many of them will be speakers and attendees. Last year, we had 400 of these corporate venturing leaders in the industry itself come together. They had aggregate annual revenues of more than $4 trillion and about $20 billion plus of venture assets under management. So it was quite a gathering in the UK. It was about two or three times the size of the UK economy gathered in one reasonably large hotel venue by St. Paul's Cathedral. So we'll be there again this year. But to get a sense of how the qualitative side, here's a selection of quotes from the CEOs of the CVCs that have been nominated so far. So Ulrich Spiesshofer, president and CEO of ABB, a Swiss industrial group, said, "In the digital environment, technologies are being developed and converging at a rapid and accelerating pace, challenging business models and transforming industries. As a pioneering technology leader, ABB created ABB Technology Ventures 7 years ago to broaden our options for the future by scouting emerging technologies and business models and making strategic investments. In this regard, Girish Nakani and his team at ATV has done an outstanding job of identifying and investing in areas such as robotics, machine learning, augmented reality and cybersecurity." End quote. Masumi Minegishi, President, CEO and Representative Director of Recruit Holdings, said, "We are accelerating investment to startups with innovative technologies, since I believe open innovation is key for Recruit to grow continuously. Joe, this is Joe Saigo, who runs Recruit Strategic Partners, will bring us innovations through this initiative." While John Fallon, earlier in the year, Pearson's global CEO, a member of the Pearson Affordable Learning Fund Investment Committee, has said, "We are tripling our investment in the next fund because we know that this approach works and it's critical to our business strategy." Caitlin, this is Caitlin Donnellan, who runs that Pearson Affordable Learning Fund, and who was a rising star and has now been put forward for the power list. John Fallon said, "Caitlin is driving force behind the fund." End quote. So just a little request to add your boss's weight to a nomination or update us on your good work and deals that you've done last year and plans for this year. Please contact me at jmawson@globalcorporateventuring.com. Many of these corporate and or venture leaders, including Sadani, were quoted in the New York Times last week, giving Global Corporate Venturing data on the growth in CVCs. The New York Times piece was titled "General Mills and 7-Eleven Join the Venture Capital Crowd." And it asked whether they would, the CVCs, slow down with a greater caution being seen among the venture capitalists. Bill Gurley, a famous VC at Benchmark who had been sceptical of the unicorn valuations, those worth more than at least $1 billion, given to so many companies over the past few years, posted a great blog on the site above the crowd about how unconscious biases might mitigate against clear thinking and so be encouraging sharks into later stage highly priced rounds. He worried about the impact on those companies, both for the existing shareholders, management and early employees, about these sharks coming in. And we'll hear more about this Bill Gurley piece in our government department section coming up, as he did have some concerns that there might be unintended consequences from these sharks coming in terms of government investigations and securities. So the US has quietened on such large $100 million plus rounds, partly as a result of Gurley's blogs and others like them. And $50 million has now been seen as a new $100 million in terms of a large round. In the US, digital medicine developer Proteus Digital Health has added $50 million in a Series H financing to an equity cash balance and I'll total some $350 million over the past 15 years. That sums up. US-based companies backers include corporates Novartis, Otsuka, Oracle, Medtronic, St. Jude's Medical, Kaiser Permanente, and ON. Other large, now $50 million rounds include Google Ventures, renamed Chibi, which invested as part of the syndicate $50 million in the Series C round for Medium, a publishing platform. That takes its total funding to more than $130 million. So, of the large $100 million plus rounds last week, therefore all were outside of the US. Much has been made of Alibaba's emergence. This is a China-based online retailer. As a large-scale strategic investor over the past few years, and it continues to go from strength to strength. The e-commerce group sealed two huge deals last week, making billion-dollar investments in LA.me and Lazada, which is a Singapore-based retailer. And in this week's big deal by Rob Levine, who's news editor of Global Corporate Venture, we take a look at the firm's investment strategy, this is Alibaba, and what those transactions might mean going forward. UCWeb and Alibaba's subsidiary press start on a $20 million India gaming fund and launch in the InDev program through its 9apps app store. But Alibaba isn't the only player in China's e-commerce sector to make a big move in the past week. JD.com paid $200 million for a 47.7% stake in logistics company DataNexus in a deal that will involve merging its own e-commerce subsidiary, JD Daijia, into the company, which operates across 37 Chinese cities. Baidu, a search engine provider in China, which already owns IQ, one of China's most popular video streaming platforms, has decided to spin out a new online video company that will focus on what it calls professional generated content. So this Baidu unit has raised $155 million in a round led by TV and film production company Shanghai New Culture Media, while game developer Dalian Zeus contributed $39 million. Baidu also plans to launch a fund that will support the creation of original content for the platform. Elsewhere, Cabify, a Spain-based company, has become the latest ride-hailing service to raise significant funding, pulling in $120 million from a Japan corporation called Rakuten. Rakuten led the round, values Cabify at $320 million post-money. Funding will support Cabify's expansion from Spain to Latin America, where it tends to form partnerships with car manufacturers and ride-booking networks based in Latin America. Back in China, we have Yachufa, which specializes in short-haul holidays and local boats, but has planned to expand its range of destinations after closing an $85 million Series D round backed by strategic partner Utor. As part of their agreement, travel agency Utor is sharing resources including its loyalty membership base with Yachufa, which has now raised $130 million together. And Lexmark, which is a sort of US-based printing company, was sold to China's Apex Technology, PAG Asia Capital, and Legend for $3.6 billion. We wouldn't normally cover buyouts, this is my majority deal, but actually, this Legend Capital was this corporate venture and usually venture-focused arm of Lenovo, which is a PC maker, which also has a different group called Honey Capital, which raised $2.7 billion for a separate private equity fund. And so we're really seeing in China in particular, you know, groups like Baidu, Alibaba and Tencent, and so-called bats, plus these JD.coms, Qihoo, Cheetah Mobile and Legend Capitals, the ability to go up and down the spectrum of size of deals. And I think we'll see that reflected in our global corporate venture and power. This ability to do both large M&A type transactions, be involved in, you know, smaller deals, as well as, you know, put large amounts of equity into specific companies is really significant in time. Given the slowdown in the US, the fact that the Chinese market is using this as an opportunity to really continue to expand and develop, and that internal competition between these bats and others is really driving that market to impressive lengths. So of the exits that we've seen, SecureWorks was the US's first IPO, or tech IPO of the year, as a spin-out from PC maker Dell. while we have seen biotech flotations become fewer after particularly hot 2014, it was a bit slower last year, and it's continued to be reasonably slow so far this year. Genzyme Biologics, which filed for an IPO back in July last year, a few months later was withdrawn after the Novartis-backed eye disease therapy developer cited market conditions. The decision was made roughly the same time as another biotech company, Bavarian Nordic, did the same, which Rob Levine, a news editor at Global Corporate Venture and others, think is a worrying omen for the IPO market. And Rob and others worry that we'll see slightly fewer CVC exits this year. Of the exits we have seen, Tencent-backed Yijiaji in China competes in linked listing. This is China's national equities exchange and quotations market. And it's an app-based home cleaning service, but it still shows that exits as well as investments are happening in China. Back in the US, of the exits we have seen a number of trade sales. As there's relatively fewer IPOs, it's actually quite hard to get the level of exit activity that most venture investors will want. But 7 months ago, media group Hearst invested $20 million in a Compass digital media brand focused on millennial males. And it's now followed that up initial investment by agreeing to jointly acquire the company and telecom firm and partner Verizon. Other exits, apparel manufacturer Iconics also exited that Complex deal, which is said to value Complex at between $250 and $300 million. Hearst and Verizon will each earn 50% of the company once the deal is done. Other exits, Asahi Shimbun, a Japan-based company, goes native with content marketing with Sunrite acquisition, and Gree's corporate venture unit will exit Sunrite through that sale. Oracle, a US-based database provider, has drawn up a $50 million acquisition of Crosswise from Nielsen, the backed VC firm Peric Ventures. Mars Petcare acquired Whistle from Nokia Growth Partners, while Robert Bosch Venture Capital agreed to sell award-winning semiconductor company Greenpeak to Nasdaq-listed Huawei. But probably one of the most controversial ones was the Capital Partnership, a UK-based fund manager, has agreed to acquire Northgate, the VC and private equity funds with $4.8 billion of assets under management. Northgate had been primarily owned by India's Vilajavi Enterprises, as a sort of corporate venture funds. It's reasonably controversial just because Dan Primack, a great columnist over at Fortune, had tried to talk to Northgate and the Capital Partnership about this deal, and let's just say he felt he had been slightly misled by information he'd given about what some of the senior staff at Northgate would be doing post this sale and acquisition by the Capital Partnership. Leave you to go over to Fortune and read more, but as ever, Dan Primack, great reporter and great blogger, has really sort of caught the eye with that sort of coverage. The VC fund of funds market is actually quite interesting. We've seen four fund of funds close in Canada, partly through government backing over the past year or so. These are all really reasonably large fund of funds. And we'll be working with the Canadian government later this year for an event to bring some of the corporates together to explore the burgeoning entrepreneurial scene up there. That's likely to be in early September. But in mid-October, ahead of an event we're doing down in Brazil with the government there, we're working with the US trade body, the National Venture Capital Association, to bring together corporate LPs with emerging VC funds. That'll be in New York City on the 12th of October. We'll see who comes to that in terms of whether Northgate and Capital Partnership do, but certainly we'll expect to get lots of corporate LPs, given the amount of activity that they are providing as limited partners in VC funds. For example, Green, which formed a $12 million virtual reality fund, had invited in local Japanese corporations, Colourpop and Mixi, as limited partners into this fund. So that's quite an interesting sort of development in terms of multi-corporate, where CincyTech, VC firm, received what we call healthy interest for its four funds, given that care providers Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center and UC Health were among their limited partners. So it's quite active from a corporate venturing perspective in terms of investments, exits and fundraising. Over in universities, Thierry Hillis has been doing a great series looking at Birmingham University in the UK. And in the second of the series, Thierry takes a look and how Birmingham is building a complete ecosystem for spin-outs, startups, and late-stage companies. Highly recommend you take a look at that series. And Gov is supporting a survey of 80 university venture funds sponsored by one of our subscribers, KAUST, Saudi Arabian University, looking at how some of these deals can be benchmarked. From the government perspective, KAUST is obviously a relatively new university supported strongly by the government over in Saudi Arabia. But for our global government venture department, a few weeks ago, we took a look at the sort of chair of the Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC, the US regulator, Mary Jo White, who made a trip to Silicon Valley and gave a speech at an event at Stanford Law School. Bill Gurley, who did the Above the Crowd piece worrying about the unicorn financing trends, picked this note up about Mary Jo White's visit and her speech. And Bill Gurley says, for those that participate in unicorn investing or for those considering investing in unicorns, it would be a good idea to read the entirety of Mary Jo White's presentation. Chair White seems quite aware of the issues and pressures that the ability to distort the unicorn fundraising process, Gurley says. He quotes Mary Jo saying, nearly all venture valuations are highly subjective. One must wonder whether the publicity and pressure to achieve the unicorn benchmark is analogous to that felt by public companies to meet projections that they made to market with the attendant risk of financial reporting problems. Gurley then says, Mary Jo White sends a message to all former and future investors regarding the need for increased due diligence. Quoting White, who says, as I will discuss, the risk of the distortion and accuracy is amplified because startup companies, even quite mature ones, often have far less robust internal controls and governance procedures than most public companies. Vigilance by private companies about the accuracy of their financial results and other disclosures, thus especially critical. End quote. Gurley goes on, it would be quite unfortunate if the fundraising behaviour of unicorn hands led to increased SEC involvement and rules with respect to private venture-backed startups. But if those involved believe that not being public also means not being responsible, we will quickly find ourselves in that exact place. We will have deservedly invited more scrutiny. End quote from Gurley. And I actually agree. I think it's been quite staggering over the last 75 years or so as the venture capital market has developed, that the SEC hasn't taken closer attention to how some of the potential conflicts of interest between investors in deals, occur. We have executives of publicly traded companies investing in private companies that may or may not compete with their existing employer. We have multiple investors of similar businesses. How information leaks and goes across is a concern. We have these companies then floating late stage financing rounds. There's a lot that's been going on in the Valley, which has allowed the entrepreneurial ecosystem to develop, which is a great thing, of course, but actually brings attendant risks. And certainly we've not seen the same level of cross pollination funding sources in Europe. We would rarely see, if ever, companies like SAP, which invest through, say, Sapphire, we wouldn't see it co-invest as often with the co-founders of SAP, who are all very rich multi-billionaire with large family offices and do a lot of venture deals. But we just don't see it as often as, say, somebody in the US, some of the sort of founders and billionaires who run companies with their own corporate venturing units, that sort of crossover. I think it's one of the areas, along with financing issues with these unicorns, that if the SEC starts to bring attention to the financing angle, might also then get pulled into looking into other areas and looking further under the rock. I think the fact that the SEC has been based on the East Coast and the Valley has been able to develop over on the West, has brought a lighter touch issue. But as technology plays a greater role, as we see different changes to blockchain technologies, as we see crowdfunding, and all the various other developments, then people will naturally spend a closer attention on looking at this market. So elsewhere in global government venture, we have seen a couple of other sort of interesting pieces. The European Investment Fund, which is probably Europe's largest backer of VC funds, and increasingly through its parent company, European Central Bank, is playing a greater role in the direct market. So the EIF and PPM Oost, a Dutch regional development agency, launched a 227.5 million second Dutch venture initiative fund of funds. So we're seeing a number of these fund of funds trying to develop the ecosystem to allow the support of the VC funds, which will then do the deals rather than necessarily the government investing directly. We're seeing that sort of cross-pollination. And actually, it's one of the things that Steve Case in his Third Wave book, which recently comes out, notes, is that the next generation of real entrepreneurial ecosystems and hotspots will have much more of that collaboration between governments, corporations, startups, other players within the ecosystem in order for that to really happen, rather than being sole people in a garage or coming out of corporate innovation. And then one final note here, which is Matt Robinson, a real stellar thought leader in the UK ecosystem here, being head of strategy and market development at Big Society Capital, which was a social impact investment bank created by the UK government out of bank money. He's moved from BSC over to CDC Group, the UK government's outward aid agency for developing markets, and has become an investment director there this month. So congratulations to Matt, and be interested to see how CDC, which is, funnily enough, run by the woman who set up Reed Selvier's corporate venturing unit, Diane Noble, will sort of take on and develop its corporate and venturing ecosystem over on that side. But I've been watching CDC for a while as a result, working with Diane. It's been brilliant. And I think with Matt joining, I think that team is really, really going places. So that's all from the Global Venturing Review from this week. It's been an exciting week, and there's been plenty to come on. There, do let us know all the activities and as things develop. Congratulations to Arvind on setting up Silver Trail Ventures. It was a pleasure to catch up with you in Japan and hear your insights on the market generally, even if you couldn't talk about the fundraising for the firm itself, because SEC restrictions, funnily enough. So thanks all. See you next week.
Global Venturing Review was produced by In Ear Production. You can find out more by going to inearproduction.com.